Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey guys, welcome to a special Valentine's Day edition of Soul Sisters.
Happy Valentine's Day, Jesse.
Happy Valentine's Day, Dara. I want to say something about Valentine's Day.
Do it.
I feel like this might be controversial. I feel like we should move past the rhetoric of I love Valentine's Day or I hate Valentine's Day. That Valentine's Day is for lovers or Valentine's Day is for your girlfriends. It's like this weird didactic. You know what's funny?
I think dichotomous is wrong too, but
I used didactic in therapy this morning, and as I was saying, I was like, I don't think that's right. Is my therapist gonna correct me? And she didn't because she's a therapist, right? She wanted to destroy me in that moment. Anyway, the dichotomy is I want to throw it away. I want to say that I am just happy that I have people that I love in my life.
It doesn't have to be about my romantic mother, love.
It includes my dog, my girlfriend, you, everybody.
Love that.
Yes.
It should absolutely be that.
Let's not draw lines on Valentine's Day.
And we can still celebrate with chocolate and hearts that way.
Sure.
I could still give you a card if I wanted to.
Exactly.
I've thought about that. Like, I want to show love on the day.
Yeah. And we don't have to call it Galentine's Day. Just call it Valentine's Day. Let's just all make it what we want it to be. Now, okay. If Valentine's Day is a day that makes you feel a little extra lonely or sad, if that's how you're feeling, I also see that. I appreciate that. But I just think if we all kind of change what this day is supposed to be about, then we can also stop feeling like shit about it. I mean, 100%. I am dating someone this year, which never happens on Valentine's Day. I still have been annoyed at my mother and grandmother both asking me repeatedly what we're doing on Valentine's Day. Because it's like, why is this information that I need to share with the family?
Right.
Like it is
yet
this
another
new box to check off that you guys can then all talk about. Like, it's not that big of a deal.
Do you pass the test?
Right.
Are you in love? Are you a good couple?
You know? And my answer of, I don't know, I think we're going to lay low, I could tell was not satisfying to them.
It's another generational thing.
Yeah.
Valentine's Day was more, I think we're moving away from that as a culture.
Yeah.
For people take it seriously to the level of like it meaning something. I think more and more of my friends, at least, are not observing it in the way of like,
totally,
oh, we must do this on Valentine's Day.
Right. Also, I've noticed
there's nothing wrong with doing it, but
no, totally. None of my married friends celebrate Valentine's Day.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's amazing. Like,
every day should be a day of appreciation.
Yeah. No, but they're always like, nothing. Whatever. I don't know. We're like picking up the kids from school. Yeah. What do you want? Anyway, but this is a Valentine's Day episode. Because Andre Gibson is on the show. Andre Gibson is a beautiful spoken word poet who has a new book and a new album out. The album is poetry accompanied by music, and the book is poetry. And Andre Gibson is a genderqueer poet, so we got to explore that identity on the show in a way that we haven't gotten to before. And what it means for the show to have a guest on that identifies that way. I think that we are getting to a place where Soul Sisters is you and me, and Soul Sisters is about sharing stories of people who don't always get the attention that they deserve and can shed a spotlight on humanity that we need more of.
So proud to be part of that.
Yeah. Anyway, Andrea's also just like hilarious and brilliant and gave us a performance on this show, which we don't get to do much anymore. So make sure you listen through to the end of this episode when they read one of their poems. It was a Dara request.
And they nailed it. No paper, like no prior.
You were so funny. No, you were like, I feel like you asked them if they could remember it, and you seemed very impressed by the fact that they could remember it.
Well, because I think that you need to practice. I think they have so many poems, and like the what I could have asked for is endless. So
yeah.
Like,
no, that's true. That's true. But it was from the new book.
It was. It wasn't.
Oh, it wasn't.
No. It's from the new album.
Oh, the new album. Sorry.
Which, if you don't perform it live, they might not be ready for it.
True. They do perform it live, and I saw them perform it live.
Okay.
I think it was the same night that they did the show. It was very different to hear it in a room than on this podcast. It got a lot of laughs in the room. I just think it felt different.
The energy
here
was like so
was
reverent.
Here.
We were like, oh my God. Yeah.
Fascinating. Anyway, so the performance that you'll get on this episode, guys, is very different than if you went out and saw them perform it at a show. So I'm excited to share this with you guys. And I think we've said enough. We shouldn't blabber on when we have an actual poet on the show. Yeah. So without further ado, Andrea Gibson on Soul Sisters. Happy Valentine's Day. Andrea Gibson, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
We are very excited to have you. As you can see, we brought our books with us. We're in the Andrea Gibson Book Club now. It's official.
It's our first book club.
It is.
Yeah. Nice.
What are you doing with a copy of your book?
I'm in the book club too.
Great.
Founding member.
Yeah. And
I only start book clubs where we read my book.
Yeah. I guess for those who are listening and not watching the video version of this, we were talking about your book, Take Me With You, which is coming out this week that we're recording in. And it's a smallish book. I was just saying I love it because I can fit it in my coat pocket and show people that I'm a reader. And what were you going to tell us about the size of this book?
Yeah, I was going to tell you a funny story that when I dreamed up this book, my idea was to have a book that was the size of a cell phone because it was during the time when I was getting bad news into my, I mean, it's still happening every 10 minutes. You know, you look on your phone, and it's horrible news. And I wanted something that was as handy as a phone, but that would, you know, pop up good news every now and then if you wanted to read it.
That's awesome.
Then when I got the first copy in the mail, I was like, wait, it's double the size it's supposed to be. And they said, oh, no, we couldn't put it on the shelf if it was that little. So the whole time,
Oh, but so this is a big book in your eyes.
It looks giant to me now. Oh, yeah.
That's funny. This is a good news book. I brought this book into bed with me recently to read romantic poems to my girlfriend.
Ooh.
And it was, I mean, that sounded a little weird. We just were having a nice moment before going to bed. And I was like, I'm going to read some of these out loud to you as like part of my prep. She was like,
that's so nice.
A literary threesome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it
I'm
works
in beds
well.
All over the world.
I'm sure you are. So congrats on the book.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And you have a new album out.
I do.
Concurrently.
Yeah, I have a new album called Hey Galaxy, and it came out just a few weeks before the book is coming out. So it's a lot to do at once, but Trump is president, so there's a lot to do.
A lot of material to push out there.
Yeah.
Now, is this the project that I read that you had delayed after the election?
The album was originally I was writing an album that was entirely a love album. So every poem on the album was going to be a love poem. And then Trump got elected, and I just couldn't stomach not putting out something that was, you know, more political.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, the album also has love on it, which is political because it's, you know, super queer. But
Right. Yeah. Do you feel like your work then has become more, like, political?
I don't feel like it's become more political. It just felt like bad timing, just in my spirit, to put out something that wasn't specifically addressing the awfulness of him.
Totally.
Especially when your work has so much been focused on
right.
on those efforts in the past. And so it's like, why now?
Yeah. Right. And, you know, I still want to do it. I was on tour a couple of years ago with Holly Miranda. And right before I was taking the stage one night, she told me that Nina Simone spent several years during the civil rights movement refusing to sing anything but social justice songs. So people would come to her shows and request love songs, and she would refuse. Yeah. And I remember that night making my set list and thinking, I'm going to leave all the love poems off my set list. But then I got on stage and realized that just by the nature of the fact that, you know, my poems are about women, it makes them political, which is right. heartbreaking. So I still think, you know, the romantic project would still be political. I just wanted something with a little more boom right now.
Yeah. Totally.
It's interesting. I asked you if we were talking about you reading a poem at the end of this, and I requested Boomerang Valentine, which when I was listening to the album, that one came on, and it was a bit of a breath of fresh air, a break from really hard stuff. I mean, there's hard stuff, and then there's really, really hard stuff. And so, you know, and it's all important, and it's all the sense of urgency, but there was a sort of lightness and love just innately has that. So I wonder how, you know, how much of a kind of I mean, Trump being elected was a drag overall, but then the idea of like, oh, I don't get to make this love album. I don't get to focus on these things. In general, I think artists are struggling with that a lot. Like, I have to now focus on this, whereas like love is still this overpowering thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we have a mission now.
Right. You know, my therapist, who I never go a day without quoting.
It's a good sign.
Yeah. Says that the only thing that we really have control over is where we put our attention. So I do think it is a really important time to put your attention on love and you know, the lighthearted things, to put your attention on joy wherever you can find joy, you know, because you'll need it as fuel to, you know, step up right
now.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Totally. I feel like we should acknowledge that you are the first, at least, open genderqueer guest that we've had on this show.
Oh, wow.
And it wasn't even a second thought for us to book you on the show and the opportunity presented itself. It was after we booked you, then we had to have a talk with each other about the mission of this show, because it's always been just inspiring women in music or arts who, you know, have stories to share that we wanted to give them a platform for. So then it was like, okay, we know that we want to have this person on the show. So then what is the show really about, and why is it important to us now?
Hmm.
And it wasn't hard to figure out. The whole point for us is to just help illuminate stories that should be told and that don't often have enough of a spotlight or a platform. Not that you seem to be lacking in a platform, because you have a lot of work and a huge fan base, but we want to be part of telling the stories that you are telling, you know, anyway. Yeah. So this feels like a very important episode for us to have, and kind of expanding the umbrella. Also because, you know, I identify as a woman, but have also very much had the experience of feeling queer to my gender. You know, I was like thinking about things I did as a child. I actually remembered when I was little, I was probably like 8 or something, someone, it must have been my mom, but I'm not exactly sure, bought me a little shaving kit that was for boys, like lather up soap and do this and like learn how to shave. And because I was like, I was a pretty big tomboy for a while, and I like really wanted this. And I remember like my mom helping me like practice lathering the soap and
you're
like
motioning
shaving.
On your face.
Huh?
Were you?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I was like pretending to shave my face. Like, yeah. And
a very
just,
different experience than I had with shaving.
Right.
Yeah.
Which was like
being in the bathtub
legs.
And shaving my legs and being like, oh, that actually worked. Yeah. Well, weird.
You mean real shaving?
Yeah, real shaving.
Yeah, well,
like,
eventually
oh,
I did
feels,
that too.
This will be fake. And then the hair came off. And I was like, oh, that's just what shaving is.
Yeah.
But it wasn't my face.
Right, right. No, it was my face. But I just like realized how amazing that was, that my mom was doing that with me when I was a little kid and like didn't give me a problem, you know? And like then later I became interested in other things. But anyway, so there's a lot that I think anyone can relate to. And I think in general, talking about gender queerness is something that's important for everybody, because just understanding what gender even means, I think, can apply it to so many people, because we're all taught certain things about our gender when we're growing up that then like you have to kind of try to reconcile in certain ways, because maybe you don't actually. Anyway, I don't need to explain this to you, but just explaining why I'm very excited to talk about this on the show. Long
Ditto.
Story short.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, y'all.
Anyway.
To that end, I mean, the the ways that language has opened up and allowed us to have a discussion about queerness and gender non-binary stuff in a whole new way. I love the way that you put it at one point, that it was, I remember when someone handed me the word genderqueer, and just that image is like being handed a gift, you know? And you said, I heard that word and I knew myself better. That's what writing can do. It can make us know ourselves better and know others better. And I think that ties into your work as a spoken word artist. Like, what we're able to now speak with in terms of the language of it is so enormously helpful and confusing at the same time. I'm curious your just overall thoughts about having, using this pronoun and all of the different pronouns and words and all this stuff.
Yeah, I have so many thoughts.
The power of naming things.
Yeah.
And just like what language can lend.
Totally.
And
because to someone who's a bit more removed, it feels overwhelming and confusing. But for you, it felt like a gift of liberation and self-identity. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really interesting thing to unpack.
Yeah. So Leslie Feinberg said that gender is the poetry each of us makes with the language we've been given. And I think a lot about what language we have, and when we have new language, what that does to our own experiences of ourselves. And that's one of the most exciting things about writing poems about gender, because it's not like I go into the poem feeling like I've figured myself out. I go into the poem as a place to explore and learn through the writing process. So then when new words are coming in, you know, I have a friend, Shira Ehrlichman, who's also an amazing musician, but she does this thing in her writing where she's constantly nouning verbs and verbing adjectives. And I remember when I first heard her poetry, it blew open my whole world in terms of how I interacted with everything. So specifically with gender, it's just really exciting. And in the last few years, I've had a different relationship with gender in that it's beginning to be fun for me, you know, and, and I'm like, wow, who am I going to be in 5 years? You know, like recently I've been trying on my girlfriend's clothes, and whenever I put them on, she's like, God, it's like you're calming down. And I'm like, what is my gender? Why do I feel so good in this long flowy thing right now? You know? And so it's constantly shifting for me. And I do appreciate what language will do with that. Yeah.
When did the poetry start for you?
Oh, like, you know, in my life?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the story that I tell, which is my oldest memory of coming home from kindergarten. And do you know when you get the callus on your finger from writing for the first time, from holding the pencil?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That bump?
God, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I remember coming home from school and telling my mother that my hand was changing shape to prove that I was a writer. I remember thinking, my body is changing to
like make...
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And so I wrote throughout my... I wrote, you know, throughout school, things that my mom always said was a sign that I wasn't going to be a happy adult because I was thinking too much. She said it in a sweet way. But and then I studied creative writing in college. I went to college to play basketball for the Lady Monks at a very conservative Catholic college. And I ended up studying creative writing while I was there. But I never ever thought I'd get on a stage. I had too much stage fright, and I still do, and just figure it out. But yeah, eventually I moved to Colorado. I discovered Poetry Slam, and I got involved. And
okay.
Yeah.
Was your poetry, did it become more personal over the years, or was it always very personal?
It was always very personal. It got more political over the years. Okay. When I first discovered spoken word, in that same year, I got involved with a group called Vox Feminista. Uh-huh. And they were just doing all this really radical art with all different mediums. But every time we put on a show, we would do an action in the community to match. I don't know what we would do, chain ourselves outside Lockheed Martin or something like that. And so it got into my brain that art was activism and that you intermesh those things. And that's when I started, you know, writing more politically.
Yeah. And that was at a time when feminism, I would say, was more kind of still almost a dirty word, like a taboo word.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, there was a group of people who, of course, really identified with it, but it was not in the mainstream culture like it is now.
Yeah.
How do you feel like now we're doing things right? And how do you feel like now we're doing things wrong from your time that you were, you know, from the time you were with Vox Feminista and in that earlier stages?
Wow. Like all the things we've done wrong since then.
Now. In the new movement, I would say.
You know, one of the things that was happening then is, and maybe it's just a product of social media, where I notice, at least in just the communities that I witness, I notice a lot of people being afraid to speak up for fear of saying something wrong, for fear of messing up. And I've been writing about that actually a lot lately, where, you know, to be political and to be active in this time, I think, requires a willingness to mess up, and to, because social media is what it is, a willingness to mess up publicly, and which can be hard. But I just have noticed women specifically around me and queer people around me, I'm getting in some ways more silent because of that fear of, you know, messing up and then getting called out for something they've done wrong.
Mm-hmm. Are you saying people within the community that you've been a part of who were more vocal before and are less so now?
I think so, even though I also have noticed another shift with the whole Me Too movement, with people now sort of breaking out of that shell and saying, you know, I'm going to dive into this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the Greta Gerwig thing.
Yes.
On Fresh Air, that she didn't know how to speak to it because she felt
like she was
paralyzed.
Gonna say something wrong.
Yeah.
What you just, that last comment made me think of something that I bookeared in your and Take Me With You, and we talk about this kind of a lot. You wrote, any feminist who has ever taken the high road will tell you the high road gets backed up, and sometimes we need to take a detour straight through the belly of uncensored rage.
I love you reading it. I love hearing you read it, because
yeah, that's bold, Dara. You just read that to the poet.
This is the only poem that I've written maybe in the last 2 years where I literally scream the whole thing. So I've never heard somebody do it so politely.
So calmly. See,
I love hearing it that way.
Okay. We'll have to do a mashup companion piece. Take both of your read.
This reminds, we talk a lot about needing to make people uncomfortable and what is the limits of that, what is the lines of that. And I think we're coming to, I'm coming more and more, and I think a lot of people are coming to the idea that you need to be made uncomfortable. We need to make people uncomfortable, and rage needs to, there needs to be room for that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So the idea that you're seeing people that you've been, felt a kindred with to wanting to be more quiet is interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of it's happening at once, mm-hmm. you know, and it's people trying to figure out, you know, what social media, just figuring out what they can comfortably do and then pushing outside of your comfort zone. You know, that quote, art should comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. And yeah, and then also rage. When I was doing a show with Vox Feminista, we did a year-long show once that was called Sacred Rage. It was like 11 years ago. And I remember before that, I was a little hippie, and I thought, no rage, bad.
Yeah.
But it really woke me up to know this is important to feel rage, because it's in us. Her name's Mindy Netafi. She's a poet, and she has a line that says, bend back and manifest grief. And people sometimes have trouble with that line, because they think it's saying, you know, have grief be in you. But basically she's saying it's in us. Like, rage is in us. Grief is in us. All of this is in us. So, you know, let it out, and let it out, and, you know, for your own clearing, your own being, and also to see what beautiful thing we can make from that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny. It reminds me that in the 90s, I feel like me and all my friends wanted to be hippie flower children, and to be an angry feminist was the worst term in the world, you know?
Yeah.
And now all I want to be is an angry feminist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so important, and it's also just paying attention, you know, right now. It's like impossible to not be angry.
Mm-hmm.
And I've felt this, I mean, in the last year, I've felt more political despair than I've ever felt in my life. And what that looks, I'm going from rage to terror to grief. And then every so often I, you know, snuggle my dog.
Right.
And write about love.
Dogs. Yeah. In love, too. Yeah. In love, yeah.
Snuggle your girlfriend. I'm wondering how the queerness in your writing paralleled your relationship with it in your life. Like, were they always conjoined, or did one happen ahead of the other? When did they dovetail?
You know, it was a lot of, I wonder if I'd even be a spoken word artist if I wasn't queer, because in the beginning it was so much of what I had to speak about. You know, when I'm writing, I'm often, there'll be so many things I want to write, but I'll tap in that day and just, what is the thing that wants to be spoken the most? And in the beginning, I don't, every single thing I was writing was queer. Mm-hmm. And it also helped me to, because I, you know, I was scared in the beginning too. I was, it took me sort of a long time to come out. It was a painful struggle with my family, and I was living in a really conservative place. But as soon as I started, you know, yelling about it on a microphone, then at that point it just sort of felt ridiculous to to be scared, or, you know, to not be celebrating myself, you know, because it also feels, y'all know, it feels important if you're putting out some sort of public message to feel some congruency. Sometimes I think sanity is actually congruency, like in different parts of your life, where, you know, how you're existing in the private world is, you know, at least integrity wise matching up to who you're presenting publicly.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, we talk sometimes about the importance of representation, and if you can see yourself in someone else or on screen or whatever, you can sometimes identify who you are better, but also how you represent yourself can, like, help you identify yourself. You know, it's like sometimes people will start writing about something and then they realize that that's actually coming from a more personal place than they realize, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Go for it. I mean, I think about that all the time because I don't, you know, I don't often write where I am, especially in this last year. I've written, you know, I've written a lot of hopeful poems, and I've written them on miserable days. It's like sort of writing and then trying to, not necessarily writing where I am, but writing where I want to be, and then try to follow the poem in that direction, sort of as a guide in a way.
Yeah, that makes sense. What were we going to say?
I'm curious if you could just speak a little bit to the pronoun stuff. I mean, one of our favorite shows, favorite things that we bonded over first as friends is Transparent. We absolutely adore the show. Jill Soloway recently, I don't know where she stands with it now, but she...
Go for herself.
Yeah. And using her language around herself. I know that I heard in an interview where she at one point said, you know, yeah, I use the word they, but more as like a form of protest and to annoy people, which I thought was interesting. So I'm curious if you could just talk a little bit about your feeling about it and evolution with it and just in general.
Yeah. So I use they, them, theirs pronouns. And for any listeners that, you know, aren't familiar with that, do you think that there may be some people listening
Definitely.
That? Yeah. And so people will often say that that's, you know, they can't get their head around it. They don't know how to use it in a sentence. And it's pretty simple. Like, where's Andrea? Oh, they just went to the bathroom. Where's Andrea's bag? Oh, I think they left it over there. You know, and it's easy once you get used to it. But sometimes people struggle with it and the beginning. Like my partner's mother, for example, will say, when is they coming over? I mean, but she's, you know, it's sweet.
It's really trying.
Well, why? What should someone say in that instance?
When are they coming over? Or when
use
is
it
them?
As proper, like use it in the English grammatical.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. But you're asking in terms of how people have responded.
Yeah, and how you feel. Yeah, how it feels to use it and how you feel the response has been. And if you relate at all to that idea that Jill may have sort of put forth, which is like, I'm using this as almost a tool right now and not necessarily how
like
I actually feel. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yeah. So for me, as soon as I started using it as a pronoun, I felt this calmness in myself that I hadn't felt before. And I don't have a pained experience with any pronouns. Many people do. And for example, you know, when I'm going through airport security and they're screaming at me, pink or blue, or sir, 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 ma'am, ma'am, ma'am. That thing, it hits me in my heart only because I know that other people have that experience and it's really, really painful. Mm-hmm. For me, I've never really flinched at any pronoun. It's just sort of been comfortable, even though now I'm so used to people pronouncing me correctly that if somebody says she, now I'll notice it and startle a little and think, oh, that's not me that they're talking about. It doesn't feel like me. But at the same time, it's not a painful thing. Where it is painful is if I have people in my life who are really close to me, like my best friends. If my best friends or my partner were to mispronoun me, then that, for some reason, that will that hurt a little bit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is your relationship with the title that you carry, and that is in your Wikipedia, I think, as being the... Well, I guess it's the first winner of the Women of the World Poetry Slam.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know. I love having that. I love having that in there. And, you know, it's interesting because that company, well, first of all, I think that happened in 2008. And that was the first year I remember being backstage. I remember being backstage at that competition and looking around and thinking, do I belong here? If I'm saying that I don't necessarily feel like a woman, or I don't necessarily feel like a man, I definitely don't feel like a man, then do I belong here? And I remember feeling that. The competition has since changed where it's inclusive to, you know, genderqueer and trans folks. And it's I think it's only just if you're a cis dude, you can't be here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's still, I don't know. One of the things actually that comes up for me is that at that competition, I was reading poems about sexual assault more than I was reading anything else. And for some reason, which is its own poem yet to be written someday. But that is the time when I'm reading a poem about sexual assault that I feel where I feel the word woman most resonates with me. It's and really intensely. It's like I'll be in the middle of a show. I'll feel, you know, clear in my gender throughout. And then I'll start reading a poem about sexual assault. And I'm craving women's space. Like, I'm just like, yeah, so...
Do you have any analysis on that?
Yeah. I mean, I do have lots of analysis, but I feel like it's one of those things that I'd want to put out carefully, and I don't know if I could express it in a way I'd want to right now.
Yeah.
Talk about an outstanding expression. Your new song. Peace, Take Me With You. No, not Take Me With You. What's the video? Your Life.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, my God. The idea that now people have, younger people, have this ability to hear and see and experience what you're sharing in a way that you never did as a kid. You know, it was just not available now at the internet. And you put an incredible video together full of friends and other...
Friends and friends of friends.
Friends who represent the whole spectrum of gender identity and all of this stuff. And it was, I mean, it's so powerful to see what's at the disposal now of the next generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
I mean, that's what I love about that video is how many different people are represented in it. And I do. Every time I see it, I can feel my young self, you know, my little like 10-year-old self, like, what would have been different if I had seen something like, you know, had could see it anywhere, see queer people anywhere. And yeah.
If you'd just been able to Google like queer, you know, you totally couldn't go, where would you go, you know? And now it's just
like genderqueer. God,
right.
I know. Yeah. You and I didn't even have Google.
Right.
Let alone be able to find queer
imagine
things. Yeah. When did you add music and why and how?
Yeah, so that started. I've been doing that at for years now. I think this is my 7th album that I've just put out, and they all include music on them. But it was because I was touring so much for so many years, and I was just opening for or musicians were opening for me, and I was meeting so many musicians and making friends with them that I just discovered that I preferred making art with other people as opposed to alone. And so now
for a writer.
Yeah. And every time I write something now, I think, who can I collaborate with on this? And then I've also been doing some things lately with dancers and just a different sort of mediums. And I've been doing, you know, spoken words so long that I think just naturally I'm thinking, what else could I do with this?
Yeah. Do you do any other kind of performance?
I mean, I know 3 chords on the ukulele.
Okay.
And that's
sometimes
it.
That'll get you by.
I mean, I'm a fantastic dancer.
Okay. What about acting?
No, I'd be awful.
Really?
I'd be awful at
acting. What
about
as yourself?
You know, I just actually finished a screenplay. It's a secret project. Just last night, actually.
Woo, we figured. Congrats.
Congratulations.
Yeah. How does that feel?
It feels really intimidating because it's a true story about a part of my life that I've never told in poems before, that it has felt like too vulnerable a story to tell. And so my partner and I wrote it together and we finally finished it. And the whole time she's like, oh, you can act in this. And I'm like, no way. No, I couldn't.
I bet you could.
No, I'd really be bad. I can tell I would be bad, especially playing myself. If I could play a goofball, I mean, not that I'm goofy, but if I could play some sort of funny character,
yeah,
I could do that, yeah.
I wanted to ask about the role of humor in this stuff. Like, how conscious are you of trying to inject a little bit of humor every now and then, or does it just come out naturally?
Because it's really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Among all the other things, it's also really funny.
Yeah. It's really important to me in any, like, full project I put out. Like, for example, with this, there's a lot of humor in this, but also I'm looking at the book right now, but also the album, but the shows, live shows especially, because there are so many heavy pieces, and I just consider people's emotional stamina throughout the show. And also it can be a great way to, you know, get people to let their guards down and then sort of sneak in heavier information about what you should do right now to change the world.
Yeah. What should people do right now? Do you have an action list?
Oh my gosh, that's a hard question.
I know.
$1 million
answer.
You know, I had this, the thing that's, I don't know if it's a do thing, but somebody was asking me about radical forgiveness in an interview recently. Mm-hmm. And I kept thinking about that. And I think the thing under that, before that could even be a step, would be radical self-forgiveness. I think that a lot of, to quote my therapist again, she says that shame is the closest state to death. And I feel like a lot of us are walking around with a lot of shame. And to start working on healing that, to me that feels like a primary step in fixing all the mess.
It's great.
Yeah, I love that. Are you on a tour right now?
So much
tour happening.
So much so you miss your bed.
So much so that we're dragging a U-Haul through Manhattan right now, and there's no place to park.
You're doing it.
I think the tour manager just drove to Long Island to park the. I mean, it's 5 months of tour, and we're just in the first week right now.
Oh wow! Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
5 months.
It's a long time. That's I've long. Never done anything like it before.
What's the longest break you're going to have in 5 months?
I think that we get a 7-day break, and then we get one other 5-day break, maybe 4 days.
Okay. Is there any unusual gig that you have? Are they all pretty much?
You mean like a place, space,
yeah, venue that's
space.
Yeah, yeah, like a group.
I'm trying to think. God, this sounds so boring, but I don't think
no,
so.
No, I mean, great. They just have, you know, yeah, normal theater.
It's interesting because we're doing a lot of, you know, like rock clubs, yep. Which is interesting to see people stand up to hear poetry. I used to think,
right,
that's a no-no. Don't make them stand up. And then, but the energy is so wild when, yeah, people are standing that it's cool.
I'm guessing you asked that because you're just imagining where
groups asking you to come and
say,
well, also, yeah, because I think the opportunity for different types of invitations would be like enormous right now.
Yeah,
right.
Like barber shops and stuff.
Well, sure.
I love the idea of doing a restroom tour, you know, when the whole North Carolina bathroom debacle was happening. I love the idea of taking over restrooms and just doing genderful poetry in all the restrooms. But
that'd be fucking awesome.
I know. I feel like people should
have
people should have, you know, some safe, quiet space in restrooms. So
yeah,
I don't know. I was torn.
When's the last time you performed in a coffee house?
Oh,
not that long ago.
Yeah, sure, not that long ago.
Okay. What about a college campus? Like, are you still
like
hit
in
up
two
those?
Days from now? Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I still do colleges for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That feels right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feels like people need that, want that very
Absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And what, like, I'm coming to see you perform tonight.
Oh, cool.
What
great.
Can one expect at one of your shows?
Well, the great thing about that is, and this doesn't sell books at all, damn it, or albums, but I think spoken word is an art form that has to be experienced live to really get it, because the energy is just, I mean, if I could do anything that in the world tonight, I would go see somebody's spoken word show or just listen to a bunch. I love it so much. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I don't know, it's energized, it's funny, you know, probably at any spoken word show it would be really political, also you'd cry, hopefully there'd be a lot about love, you know, and people generally in the audience, the audiences tend to be really kind to each other, and I think every time I get on stage I think about how I know there are people that came to the show alone and they were scared to come alone, because I talk a lot about, you know, anxiety and panic attacks and mental illness and suicidality. And so there are a lot of people that show up really vulnerable and then just trying to create as safe a space as possible for people to, you know, have a good time and feel like they're somewhere, you know, where they're welcome and wanted. But yeah, a lot of stuff happens. Sometimes I have panic attacks right there on stage. Yeah.
How does that go? Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So, you know, my therapist...
I should
give
her.
You should give, yeah, it's you like, should recommend
now
to the commercial.
She gave me, like, she helped me out so much because I spent a lot of years trying to hide the fact that I was really afraid to be on stage. And she gave me permission to just start telling the audience anything I was feeling. So if anything that's happened during the day, it just comes with me on stage. And I know that there's a rule that says that shouldn't happen, but it happens. And so if something sad has happened, if I'm terrified, if I'm panicking, I'll stop the poem and just, you know, tell the audience that I'm panicking. And
will that diffuse it?
Yeah, to because you know,
I feel like that does compound it when you start trying to hide it, and then you become panicky that it's happening.
Anything is that way.
Yeah.
It's the original thing that hurts, and then the covering up of the hurt is unbearable. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, I do want to share with our listeners who this amazing therapist is. We won't do that. But it's like the biggest thing to have someone who like gives you all these kernels of wisdom.
Yeah.
Or to just have a friend who can pass that along for free.
Exactly, right? But I'm surprised it doesn't translate into, it should translate into merch sales of your book and your album, because it is your words and your mind that are coming through. And so people, I'm sure, want to take that home with them.
Oh, yeah. And people still get a lot. I mean, the albums and books are awesome.
Yeah.
I just know that whenever I'm on a show like this and I say, you know, the best way to take it in is live. I could feel the publisher being like, no, it isn't.
But guess what, guys? You're in for a treat because we're going to get a live reading right now. And Dara had a special request.
Yes. I did request Boomerang Valentine, if that is okay with you.
Yeah,
and
that's
why
great.
Dara, is that the one that you're requesting?
That's the one that I was listening, and There was one on a lot of gun violence right before that. And there were sort of heavier ones, which, of course, you know, I'm getting ready. And I was sort of like, OK, this is amazing and powerful, but wow. And then Boomerang Valentine came on and there was a little bit of a lightness and a little bit of a love vibe. And but still laced throughout it was all of the was all the politics that run throughout everything. So yeah. I was just drawn to it.
Yeah, this poem was inspired by The Body Is Not an Apology. Have you all heard of that? It's like this activist poet, Sonia Renee, is just fabulous. She would be amazing in here. And she started this whole movement called The Body Is Not an Apology, and it's all about radical, unapologetic self-love. And she talks about love, self-love in the context of, you know, bringing in the whole political world. And so it's, awesome. Yeah. Great. So I read the poem.
Oh, cool.
Hope I can remember the words.
Yeah, you're not going to read it. You're just going to.
Yeah.
Recite.
I'm sitting on my friend's couch, several months into being intentionally single and celibate for the first time since I was 20 years old. 20 years old when I believed sex had to involve a dude and the word screw. I'm telling my friend about the psychic who said, I'm going to meet the love of my life by the end of January. It's January 10th, and I am so far from ready for Cupid, that naked little shit, to fire anything sharp my way. So far from ready to be the kind of crazy only love makes me. My friend musters every bit of New Age jargon she can fit onto her tongue and says, what if you are the love of your life? I think, oh my God, I hope that's not true, because I am absolutely not my type. But let's say for a moment I am. Let's say I am my dream boyish, girlish boy, and I'm standing on my front step, ringing my own doorbell, waiting for me to answer so I can hand myself a mason jar full of water lilies I have rescued from a millionaire's Monet. Let's say I am so charmed by the radiance of my own anarchy. I invite myself in for tea, and when I'm not looking, I sneak the steam from the kettle into my pocket so the next time I am missing the coast of Maine, I can gift myself the fog. Let's say I'm not just running my mouth around an old cliche that says we gotta love ourselves. We don't. I know I can keep getting down on myself till I'm tucked in my grave, looking up at my name carved in stone, wondering why I never knew I'd been cast for the lead in my own life. When it comes to love, the only thing I'm certain of is you are the best thing that has ever happened to you. Whoever you are, you're a quitter, great. There's plenty worth quitting. A sore loser, who isn't? You got no discipline? Maybe discipline is for bodybuilders and closeted gay monks. Picture a magician, so attached to being perfect, he cuts off his own legs just to pull off the trick. Picture the 738 selfies I deleted before I took one I was willing to show to the world. Picture me wishing I could have all of those back, my so-called flaws in stacks like baseball cards I know will be worth something someday, like 10 tenderness, like compassion, like my capacity to think myself a catch just because I'd never seen a chandelier I didn't want to swing from, because I'd maybe go to space just to know if railroad tracks look like zippers from the moon. On days I have a hard time keeping warm in my own weather, I imagine what the first flower said to the first human trying to name half its petals love me nots. No, that is not how anything grows. Of all the violence I've known in my life, I've not known violence like the way I've spoken to myself. And I've seen almost everyone around me hold that same belt to their own backs in ambush of every way we have decided we are not enough, then looking for someone outside of ourselves to come clean that treason up. If I were to ask myself out of that cycle, I might say, listen, I am still going through my growth spurt. I am still yet to get my worst tattoo. I am still clearing the smoke from burning the toast I wrote for my own wedding day. I am still trying to get rid of my mirror face, look myself dead in the eye. I know Facebook is a lousy mortician, desperately trying to make us all look more alive. I know there are things I haven't survived. I know there are people in this world who have had to work hard to survive me. I don't ever want to take that lightly, but I want the heavy to anchor me brave, to anchor me loving, to anchor me in something that will absolutely hold me to my word when I tell Cupid I intend to keep walking out to the tip of his arrow, to bend it back towards myself, to aim for my goodness, till the muscle in my chest tears from the stretch of becoming what I came here to be, a lover of whatever got covered up by the airbrush, the truth of me, that beauty of a beast chewing through the leash, till I get a mason jar full of water lilies and I've got a kettle full of sea. And my whole life is just a boomerang Valentine coming right back at me.
Woo! Sweet.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you. Wow.
I remember the words.
Oh, you did. God. Wow. That's on Hey Galaxy?
It is, yeah.
How do you do that? Remember all the words to all the spoken word that you have to do.
Do you know what I do? I have a secret. I rhyme almost every single line, and then I spend my whole writing process trying to hide the rhyme from the listener. So
yeah.
I want to be the only one who knows I'm rhyming, but, you know, other people can hear it too. But also think about how many songs you have memorized in
but
your
head. But
there's
something different about that. First of all, there's a chorus that repeats. There's, you know, and it's kind of, there's like probably like, a handful of lines that are different from each other. I don't know. It just feels, it's really impressive. there's so much about that we could just go into. That was amazing.
Yeah.
That was really
Thanks.
Amazing.
Let it speak for itself.
Yeah.
Cool. So Hey Galaxy is the album. Take Me With You is the book. Andrea Gibson is the poet. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having
Thank
me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.